Hare Krishna.
So yeah, they've asked me to speak about Sri Hanumanji. Yesterday was his appearance day, so it's appropriate. So what I'm going to do is recount some of his glorious pastimes and the lessons that we can learn from this very great devotee, who's also known as Vajrangaji. Limbs like thunderbolts. So I just read something about Prabhupada as I was like researching, you know, a little bit about Hanuman. He said that they're trying to establish Ram Raj, he said, but really what they want is Ram Raj without Ram. They just want the kingdom of God without God. And he said that, so what they're actually trying to do is establish the kingdom of Ravana, because they want to enjoy. And, you know, this was in a conversation. And he said, and if that happens, then Hanumanji will have to come again and destroy all of them, just like he did last time. So we might be seeing Hanuman coming back. But that would be nice. We don't mind being destroyed by Hanuman. All right. So yeah, I was going to start just by talking a little bit about Hanuman's appearance. There's different accounts, of course, because of Lord Ram appears again and again in different ages. His last appearance was in Treta Yuga. Some say even a previous Treta Yuga, but even if we say he appeared in the last Treta Yuga, that was a couple of million years ago. And prior to that, he appeared in other ages. And when the Lord appears, he manifests his pastimes in a sporting spirit, it's said. So he doesn't always do it exactly the same. He'll vary things slightly. But one thing that doesn't change is his eternal associates. They always accompany him. And foremost among them, chief among his servants, Lord Ram's servants, is of course Hanuman. So in the last appearance, as far as I understand it, Hanuman took birth from Keshari, and that was his father was Keshari, his mother was Anjana. But Anjana, first of all, they're from the Vanara race. The Vanara race are a kind of monkey-type being. They're called Kimpurusha. Kimpurusha means not quite human. What are they? What being is this? Kim, what? Purusha. Because they don't look human, but they're beasts, Prabhupada said. They're actually animals. But in fact, they're not animals like we see here. These Vanaras, these monkeys, are very powerful. They're celestial beings. And they reside in a higher realm to us. That is to say, Kimpurushvasha. Kimpurushvasha, you won't be able to find it. It's a heavenly region. Bhima went there. We can talk about that perhaps if we've got time. And there he found Hanuman. But by and large, we won't find, we will not be able to travel to that place. But it exists. It's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto. And this is where Hanuman eternally resides. Well, not eternally, but certainly for the duration of this age that we're in. He's living there, glorifying Lord Ram. But in Ram's pastimes, he made his appearance, and Anjana, as a Vanara queen, was a very beautiful lady. And one day she was standing alone, it said. Valmiki describes this, that she was picking flowers or something on the mountainside, and a Vayu happened to see her, and he was very much attracted to Vayu. Vayu is the wind god. And so he came down, and by his uniting with Anjana, Hanuman was born. And so he's actually the son of Vayu in this particular pastime. So when he was born, his mother laid him down among some reeds, and he was lying there. And as young children, he was hungry. So you probably heard this story. He was looking up, and he saw the sun, and he thought, oh, this looks tasty. And it's orange and flying in the sky. So he leapt up, intending to sort of grab that. He was so powerful. As the son of Vayu, and he flying through the heavens, intending to seize hold of the sun. Vayu actually accompanied him, blowing cool breezes on his body so that he wasn't incinerated at that point. And as he was proceeding upwards, Rahu was also approaching. Rahu is the shadow planet which covers the sun at the time of the eclipse. He just has... there's just been a full total lunar eclipse, actually, yesterday. Rahu was doing his thing. and then Vishnu comes with his chakra and chases him away. But this time, he saw... Hanuman saw Rahu, and he thought, oh, I'll eat him first. So, and then Rahu was like, whoa. And he ran to Indra to seek shelter. And he said, what's going on? I have been allotted the moon and the sun as my share for my sustenance. And here is someone else coming in my place. So Indra said, don't worry, I'll take care of it. So he mounted on his Airavata and went and... he saw Hanuman, and he hurled his thunderbolt at Hanuman, and it actually hit him on the jaw. So one of the, and it broke his jaw somehow. So one of the meanings, I think, of Hanuman is of broken jaw or something, right? That's one of the meanings. And then he dropped down, and apparently he was lifeless, but... Vayu at that point became so disturbed that he withdrew the breathing power of all living beings. Because in your body, you have different kinds of Vayu, different airs. One of them is the ingoing and outgoing breath, and then there's other life airs, all of which are controlled by Vayu. So he was upset. So everyone in the universe said, can't breathe, what's going on? So the gods quickly went to Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma brought Hanuman back to his senses, back to life. And at that time, all the many gods, demigods, blessed him. And here's some of the blessings he received at the time of his birth. And Indra himself made him, said he will be invulnerable to my thunderbolt. And the thunderbolt is the most powerful weapon. So effectively, he was invincible. The weapons, the sun god, I shall bestow on him 100th part of my brilliance. So Hanuman's brilliant like the sun. And he will become the most learned in all scriptures. So Hanuman's famous for his, he's not just a mighty warrior, Mahavir, very powerful, but he's also a great scholar, a very learned person. So that was a blessing he received, actually, from the sun god. And Yamaraj granted him invulnerability to his rod, so from death. Kuvera blessed him, he would remain unwearied in battle, and so on. So all the demigods, they gave him these various blessings, which made him very, very powerful, indeed. So he's still young, he's only a young monkey, so he then went from there back home. And then he was... playful, because monkeys are like that. Then you know their nature. They'll come and snatch things and, you know, cause trouble. They can't help it. So he began to cause trouble to the rishis in the area. And he would, like, disturb their sacrifices, grab the things they were using, and throw it around and break their ladles and their sacrificial vessels. In the exaltation of his own sort of power and youth and everything. So the rishis became slightly annoyed, but they didn't want to harm him. So they cursed him. You will forget your power, who you are, until someone reminds you. So Hanuman, at that point, he was covered over by the force of that curse. And he forgot who he was, effectively. You know, he's Hanuman with all these powers gifted by the gods. So later, we'll find out. He gets it back. But Hanuman first appears in the Ramayana after Sita has been kidnapped. And Ram and Lakshman set off in search of her. And in the course of their searching, different things happened. And then they were told by Kabanda, I think, a demon whom they killed, that in order to find Sita, you must locate Sugriva, the monkey, the king of the monkeys, king of the Vanaras, and he will help you find Sita. So Ram and Lakshman are wandering, and then they come close to where the Rishyamukha hill, where Sugriva was living. At that time, Sugriva had been kicked out of his kingdom by Vali, his brother, though they'd had some disagreement there, and Vali was much more powerful than Sugriva. So, you know, Sugriva was like hiding in fear of Vali. So they were there. He was there with his ministers, amongst which was Hanuman. And then Ram and Lakshman approached that place. And then Ram was like lamenting, "Oh, Sita, where is she? What's happening? Who's taken her?" You know, he's like, at one point he was so angry, "I'll destroy the entire earth." He's aiming his arrow at the earth. And, you know, then Ram said, "Lakshman, no, calm down." He says, "Don't give way to anger. If you do that, the universe is finished. So calm down." So he calmed down. But again, he's like, he's near this mountain and he's crying loud. "Oh, Sita, Sita," he's roaring. And then Sugriva hears that. "What's that noise? Who's that?" And he's fearful, thinking, "Well, has Vali sent someone out to get me? Or is it Vali come to get me?" So he said to Hanuman, "Quickly go and find out who this is." So Hanuman immediately left. And this is where he first appears. So he goes, and from a vantage point, he looks down and he sees Ram and Lakshman, and they look like a couple of powerful gods. Mighty bodies, you know, holding bows, but dressed like ascetics. So it was a bit strange. I was thinking, who can this be? You know, so he went down. He just appeared in a small sort of monkey form, and he went before Ram and Lakshman and asked them who they were. And, you know, that you look like two ascetics, but you're carrying bows. And, you know, it seems like, are you Brahmins, Kshatriyas, what are you? And then as he looked at them closely, he was able to understand that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because, after all, Hanuman, he is an eternal servant of the Lord. So, he's able to understand. And actually, here's a lesson, because people see God, I mean, like, obviously, Ram, when he appeared, was visible to everyone, but not everyone could understand his position. God may be revealed, even he comes personally, and he's standing before us. We may not see him. Seeing God is not just an ocular thing. It's not you just with your vision. People always, like, they're always saying, "Oh, can you show me God? And then I'll believe he exists." So, okay, now God is here. You know, I was thinking that the other day. I was writing something for a broadcast I'm doing, and how people always say that, you know, "Can you show me God?" And I think to myself, well, everything shows me God all the time. Everything is God. But can you see it? Do you have the vision to recognize God? We're always seeing God, but we don't recognize him, because we don't have the qualification. To be able to see God requires purity of heart. And therefore, he says, Naham Prakasha Sarvasya, Yoga Maya Samavrita, that those who lack that, Mudhoyam Navijanati, that I am covered by my Yoga Maya potency. He doesn't want to hide. It's not like God doesn't want us to see him, Far from it. That's the very reason why we exist, because he wants us to see him. He wants us to enjoy his beauty, enjoy his opulence, enjoy everything about him, spiritual, with our spiritual senses. He wants that, but what's stopping us from seeing him is our own lack of desire. So therefore, God is invisible only for that reason. And as we become purified, gradually he becomes revealed. We begin to see him present in everything, the universal form. And then gradually we see more. And as our consciousness becomes purified, we will actually see the personality of Godhead face to face. That may take a little time, or it may not. It depends. But for Hanuman, it took no time because he's an eternal associate of the Lord. He's a Nitya Siddha. Those familiar with the term will know that this is a personality who never becomes influenced by Maya, as opposed to Nitya Buddha, into which category I fall. And others. Nitya Buddha means eternally conditioned. So the difference is that those souls who have no inclination to ever turn away from the Lord are called eternally liberated. And Hanuman is in that category. He never becomes lured by Maya. And I'll tell a little story about that in a second also. So at this point, he saw and he recognized his eternal master, Ram. And then he introduced himself. He actually changed into like a human-like form and thus began the great adventure of the monkeys and Lord Ram going and finding Sita and bringing her back and destroying the Rakshasas. So Hanuman, at this point, he still doesn't really know of his own great power and potency. So that comes soon after this, because after they make they liaise, after he liaises with Ram and Lakshman, it's the rainy season. So they await the end of that. And at the end of the rainy season, a few months later, they set off searching. Ram asks Sugriva, can you help me find her? He didn't really know where she was. They had some small clues. So they sent monkeys in all directions to find her. And Hanuman went to the south with some other monkeys. And they reached the tip of the land. And then they found out from the vulture, Sampati, was it? The name of that vulture, not Jatayu, the brother, Jatayu's brother, another great eagle, who told him that that she was in Lanka. So he'd seen her. This vulture had seen her. So they knew they had to get there, but they were facing the vast ocean. So they were all standing there, just looking out at the sea. So they decided, well, the only way we can really get there is by jumping over the ocean, which was 800 miles, 100 yojanas. So then they were talking among themselves, you know, so who can jump 800 miles? So some of them, oh, well, I can jump 500, I can jump 6, you know, and jump. Jambavan, the bear, was there. And he said, well, I'm old now. I can maybe jump there, but I don't think I could jump back. But then he turned to Hanuman and said, you're sitting silent, Hanuman. Why don't you say anything? Because I know that you actually have the power. And then he began to glorify Hanuman. He said that you're actually the son of Vayu. And you've already leapt thousands of miles into the heavens to capture the sun. Don't you remember? And then Hanuman came back to life. Yes. Actually, yes, I remember. As per the Rishi's curse stroke blessing, he recalled his great power. So he said, yes, I'll jump to Lanka. And if necessary, I'll uproot the whole city and bring it back with Sita immediately. And then said, no need to do that. Ram's instructions were, just find her and tell him where she is. I said, well, okay. Because he was very enthusiastic in his service. So then he jumped. Of course, we know this is the famous pastime. He ascended Mount Mahendra. Mount Mahendra was nearby. As you could see the tip of it disappearing into the clouds. So he said, okay, I'll just go onto that mountain. And he just ran up the side, got on the top, and hurled himself into the sky. And as he did so, the mountain was pressed down into the earth by the power of his leaping. And it's such a beautiful description, actually, of his flying through the air. So let's have a look at that. It said, as the flowers following Hanuman fell into the dark blue ocean, they made the sea appear like the star-spangled firmament. The trees dropped with great splashes like meteors fallen from heaven. Hanuman's outstretched arms looked like a couple of five-hooded serpents risen from the mountaintop. So he's like leaping like that with his fingers outstretched. It looked like two nagas had just flown off from the mountain, were flying through the heavens. So the great monkey seemed as if he were drinking up the vast ocean, swallowing the sky. His eyes blazed like two sacrificial fires, and his coiled tail flew behind him like a flag. His reddish-brown face shone like the sun, and the wind rushing past his armpits thundered like a cloud. He seemed like a comet moving through the heavens with its fiery tail. So, just by the force of his pushing himself off, he flew through the heavens for the full 800 miles and landed safely on Lanka. Of course, we know on the way he encountered various obstacles, which he summarily dealt with. A couple of demons. Simhika was one, right? The big snake lady. Who was it, her that had the blessing that anyone that came before her would be swallowed? So she opened her mouth 10 miles. And then Hanuman expanded himself 10 miles. She opened her mouth 20 miles. He expanded himself 20 miles. She opened her mouth 50 miles. He expanded himself 50 miles. And as she was opening her mouth again, he shrunk right down to a tiny size, went in and came out. He said, you've done your job. You've swallowed me. Now I'm going to go. So she says, yeah, okay. Cool. You go. So it continued. So there was a couple like that. There was another one, I think, that he killed. He went through the body and sliced it to pieces. So, yeah, he arrived in Lanka. So there's another lesson there. When he got to Lanka, Hanuman, he started searching for her. And he came to, Ravan's palace. Now, Ravan's palace is described here. I'll read that in a second. He was he made himself small. He just looked like an ordinary monkey, and he was padding through. And then he saw this like immense palace. Ravan's palace was 8 miles by 4 miles. It's described one yojana by half a yojana. So it was a sizable edifice. And he was he entered. Monkeys can usually go anywhere. It's difficult to stop them. So no one tried, and everyone was asleep. It was late at night. So as he was going through, it's described here. First thing he saw was the Pushpak Vimana, which Ravan had snatched from his brother. Ravan is the brother of Kuvera. Kuvera is the heavenly treasurer, and whatever that means, I was trying to work that out the other day. He's in charge of the finances of the gods. So he's extremely wealthy. And so his conveyance reflects that wealth. It's an enormous chariot which floats in the sky. It looks like a city. And Ravan had actually stolen that. And he had it sort of like just suspended. He said he was... it was just outside the palace. So he saw that. Whoa. Well, that was just the beginning. Because then he goes in And then it says, by his powers of illusion, Hanuman kept himself invisible to all the guards. He then entered Ravan's personal bedchambers. Its floor was covered with slabs of crystal inlaid with figures made of ivory, pearls, diamonds, coral, silver, and gold. Large pillars of gems rose up to the roof, which was studded with innumerable jewels and looked like the star-spangled sky at night. On the walls were carvings of eagles with huge outspread wings. Murals depicting the heavenly planets hung there on the walls, and the floors were covered by large silk carpets embroidered with designs of mountains, forests, and rivers. The odor of celestial foods reached Hanuman's nostrils, calling him like a loved one beckoning a dear relative. He felt all five senses being simultaneously attracted by the delights in Ravan's palace. The monkey considered that he had entered the highest abode of paradise. He compared it only to Indra's palace or the abode of Lord Brahma. Fixing his mind upon his purpose, like a consummate yogi meditating on the Supreme, Hanuman continued to search for Sita. So Hanuman is, he actually exemplifies service. He's the greatest servant. Rupa Goswami gives you names of different devotees who are examples of the different types of bhakti. And as when it comes to service, Hanuman is the exemplar. So he's a very great servant. And the quality of a servant is loyalty and determination to please the master. So Hanuman's like that. Here he is, he's surrounded. I mean, if I happened to be in Ravan's palace, I'd be like, gawking. You know, what's this? In all directions, it's just opulence and tremendous wealth. We can't even begin to imagine. It wasn't just that. Then there were the heavenly apsaras, whom Ravan had kidnapped in large number. And they were all over the place in various states of undress and disarray, lying around all over. But Hanuman's like, he's completely fixed on his purpose. He's not deviated at all, or in any way tempted by anything. You know, he's just thinking, I've got to find Sita. I've got to find Sita. This is what Ram wants me to do, and this is what I'm going to do. And nothing could stop him. So even though, you know, these various allurements were present on every single side, he didn't become distracted. So this is explained in the Gita. Vyavasyatmika buddhi, one-pointed intelligence, akha, kuru nandana. Bahushakahyanatascha, as opposed to many branched intelligence. Those who are attracted by these temporary pleasures have many branched intelligence. But Hanuman's intelligence was completely laser-pointed, laser-fixed on the goal. And then he finally reaches where Ravan himself is located. And he saw that Ravan, he said that... He came to a prominent dais made of crystal, bedecked with precious stones. It appeared like a celestial structure with a large golden ivory couch placed on it. Over the top of the brilliant couch hung a white canopy wreathed with garlands of lotuses and red ashok flowers. Lying there fast asleep was Ravan himself, snoring like an elephant. Finished drunk, knocked out. So Hanuman saw he was extremely handsome with a complexion like a dark cloud. And it's described, he had a beautiful body, he was very powerful, very handsome, and all this opulence, all this wealth, all these girlfriends, he had his wife. But he wasn't satisfied. He wasn't actually happy. None of that had made him happy. We might be aspiring for something in this world, you know. Live the dream. You know, chase your dreams and succeed and so many things. But you're not going to succeed on this level, whatever you do. You know, but Ravan wasn't happy. He was miserable. Actually, he was like angry. Another one I read about recently was same situation. Hiranyakashipu. Of course, they're Jaya and Vijaya in different incarnations. And he was the same. Always drunk on strong-smelling wines. Ravan was the same. But, you know, and everyone was bowing down to him. Ravan had controlled the universe. All the grahas, all the planets were like at his... He could, like, the different planets dictate destiny, dictate your fate and your karma. He could move them. They were scared of him. He could control universal destiny. He was so powerful. And yet, you know, and the gods were scared of him. That no one could approach him. He'd received this boon. No one could, only a human could kill him. Because he, you know, you know the story, of course. He got the boon. Humans. Yeah, yeah. Just leave out humans. Which human's going to kill me? I eat them for breakfast, literally, you know, by the dozen. That's fine. So only Ram coming as a human, he was the only person who could actually kill him. So he wasn't scared of anyone. Everyone was scared of him. He controlled everything. But he was dissatisfied. He was always angry. Hiranyakashipu was the same. Always angry. Always shouting. Always disturbed. Duryodhana's the same. Described exactly the same. Duryodhana had, not like this, but he had vast wealth and opulence. He had everything. And he was always angry. He was always disturbed. He was always agitated. Never satisfied. So we should contemplate these facts, you know, and realize that what's the point in me aspiring after that, you know, £50,000 job, £100,000? That's nothing compared to this, and it's not going to satisfy me. I'm not going to be happy. Hanuman, on the other hand, was completely peaceful. He was so satisfied inside himself with his service to Ram that none of this was of any interest to him. He just glanced at it. I'm not interested. I just want to serve Ram. And that's where real joy and happiness comes. When we serve the Lord, when we focus on our service to Krishna, rather than becoming bahushaka, becoming deviated by other things which won't satisfy us anyway. Yehi sangsparsha jaboga, the Bhagavad Gita, everything is in the Gita. It describes it, dukkha yonaya evate, that the contact of the senses with the sense objects, dukkha yonaya, is the source of suffering. Why do we suffer? Because we have senses and we experience through our senses various miserable conditions. You know, now I'm ill, now I'm growing old, now I'm dying. You know, so all these illusory events cast us into a state of dismay and suffering and distress, forgetful of who we really are. Because we have senses, dukkha yonaya, they are the source of suffering. And therefore, adyantavanta kuntaya na teshu ramate buddha. Therefore, the sages know, the buddha, the saintly persons, that this is not real happiness, that this is not to be pursued. Sense gratification is simply the source of misery. It has a beginning and an end. And anyway, when it ends, when happiness ends, material happiness, what takes its place? Suffering. So it goes round in a circle all the time. Mostly suffering. Occasional interludes of so-called happiness. So this is the situation. And the saintly persons don't involve themselves in that. Na teshu ramate buddha. They're more interested in ramante yogana nante, in the real happiness from within. And that happiness is found when we connect with the Lord, like Hanuman, when we connect with our service. Hanuman was charged with the mission of Ram. That's all we have to be. We just have to think, well, you know, understand, what does the Lord want me to do? And do it. And then we'll be happy. It's very simple. I mean, it may not be easy sometimes because we're overwhelmed by passion and ignorance. But it's a straightforward process. That first we ascertain to the best of our understanding and ability what Krishna wants me to do, what Ram wants me to do. And then we do that. And then we'll be peaceful and then we'll be happy. So this was Hanuman. So Hanuman came to Ravan, and sitting next to Ravan, he saw this lady. And first of all, he looked at him with disgust, you know, big sense gratifier. He was like, ew. He was repelled by him. He had jewels and diadem and so many things, women all around. But by his side was a lady of astounding beauty, golden complexioned, with exquisitely formed limbs, decorated with jewels and so many things. So when he saw her, he thought, oh, it must be Sita. So like a monkey, he ran up the pillars and jumped down and flipped over, backward somersaults, frontward somersaults. He was like, ah, I found her, but then stopped. Wait, hold on a second. How can that be Sita sitting next to Ravan? She would not do that. She would rather die. No possibility. So so then he realized, okay, this is not Sita, and he continued on his search. And of course, he finds her later. She's lying in the Ashok Grove, surrounded by Rakshasis, the female servants of Ravan. And then he appears before Sita, and there's a wonderful exchange between them. And then he says, I'll carry you back. When he came, he was like, he just appeared as an ordinary size, sort of Vrindavan monkey kind of thing. So she looks at him and said, well, I don't know. How are you going to carry me? And I think it's going to win. So, well, I can make myself enormous. Let me show you. But then she said, but anyway, I've taken a vow that I can't touch anyone except Ram. Another man, I can't possibly allow myself to be touched. So, and furthermore, again, he remembered Ram's order. Ram's order was, locate her and then let me know, because he wanted, this is the thing, another lesson we can learn, is that Hanuman was fixed on glorifying Lord Ram, not himself. And this is the thing, because if we're actually a servant, then we're only concerned about pleasing the master and satisfying his desire. And nothing can get in the way of that. And it wasn't like Hanuman thought, well, yeah, if I take her back, I'll get the glory. Or, people will say, well, well done, Hanuman. You found Sita and you brought her back. That's amazing. Because he wasn't thinking in those sorts of terms. And he was just thinking, okay, what did Ram ask? Ram said, find her and let me know where she is. Because he was going to do the business. Ram himself was going to rescue her and take care of Ravan and his henchmen. So he did that. He leapt back to the other side of the ocean and went and told Ram where she was. So Hanuman is thus glorified as the Lord's greatest servant. And there are many different verses found in Srimad Bhagavatam. If you want to read about Hanuman, as I say, he resides to this day. He's in Kimpurushvasha. I said I'd tell you how Bhima met him. Bhima was one day trying to find the thousand petaled lotus, right? So Ganda Pushpaka, Draupadi had asked him to find. So that was a celestial lotus that had somehow come down the Himalayas to where they were staying. So he went off searching for it, and he's running up the mountainside. And he finally comes to the place where Hanuman was. And he didn't know that at the time. He just came. Hanuman was sort of laying there with his tail across the path. And he just looked languidly laying on a tree with his long tail going across. So Hanuman had to get by. Bhima wanted to get by. So he asked, he said, oh monkey, will you please remove your tail from my path? So Hanuman, I'd like to, but I'm old, I'm tired, and I'm not well, and I can't move it. But you can move it. And he said, first of all, Bhima himself said, I would have just jumped over it, stepped over it, but he wouldn't do that because the super soul in the heart. This is the etiquette. Vaishnavs, they won't step over another person, another body, because they respect the fact that Krishna is in the heart of all beings. So he said, okay, fair enough, I'll move your tail for you. So he tried to lift his tail, and he couldn't even move it slightly. Hanuman, he's like, ugh! With one hand, he thought, just casually toss it out of the way. What? That's quite a heavy tail. All right. So he's straining himself. He's like, okay, let me use two hands. And he's got hold of it, and he's like, and he's, to the very limit of his power, this is Bhima, so powerful, he couldn't shift it even one inch. So, he realized after attempting and failing that this is not an ordinary monkey. So then Hanuman revealed who he was. And of course, they're brothers, because Bhima is also the son of Vayu. And Hanuman, he spoke to him at some length, and Bhima was questioning him. And then Hanuman said, well, look, I know you're having a few problems here with Duryodhan and company. If you like, I'll just go and crush them entirely, and then the whole city sort it out for you. And Bhima said, no, it's okay. We've made a vow. We have to stay in the forest. He said, but if you want to help, they said, I'll tell you what then. I'll become I'll stay on the banner of Arjuna. Hanuman is now, of course, on Arjuna's flagstaff on his chariot. So then he said, and by my roars, I will terrify the enemy. So he would, when Arjuna rode into battle, Hanuman on his flag would scream loudly in a terrifying, huge roars. The enemy would be like, what the heck's that? So it'd be like Hanuman doing his bit. There was that pastime. And, so Hanuman is always recognized as the foremost of the Lord's servants. And as I was saying, in the Bhagavatam, we can read some very nice prayers. There was one I read which was very beautiful. Like Hanuman said, this is not actually from the Bhagavatam. This is from a scripture called the Hayasirsha Pancharatra. And it's a well-known verse where he says, my dear Lord, if you like, you can give me salvation from this material existence or the privilege of merging into your existence. But I do not wish any of these things. I do not want anything which diminishes my relationship with you as servant to master, even after liberation. So this is the mood of a servant. Actually, there are different kinds of liberation which we can achieve. And one of them is Sayujya Mukti. Sayujya Mukti means to merge into the Lord's existence. But devotees are never interested in that, because results in you don't have any senses, you don't have any direct connection with Krishna. You can't render him service. So that's never accepted by devotees. And salvation. So again, Hanuman is saying, I don't want it. He's not interested. So this again is the mood of the perfect servant. The servant will do whatever the master wants. We saw that in the prayers of Lord Chaitanya, where he prayed, Mama Janmani, Janmanishvare, that even if I take birth again and again, I don't mind. And every day, Janmi, Janmi, Prabhu say, we sing the same prayer, birth after birth. I will be your servant. So devotees are not afraid of taking birth again, as long as they can remain in the service of the Lord. Taking birth is an extremely terrible and fearful event. Being placed in a womb is not nice, and it's described in the Bhagavatam, the third canto, if you want to read it sometime. It will give you an impetus for your spiritual life for some time after reading it. I can assure you, it's terrible. And of course, dying is also the same. Dying, taking birth, is described as the terrible, fearful cycle of birth and death. But devotees are not worried about repeated births, as exemplified here by Hanuman, if they can remain engaged in the Lord's service, because that's all they want. They know that. This is where real happiness comes from. And even that they're not interested in. Even their own happiness is of no importance. The happiness of the Lord is all they seek. So Hanuman makes that prayer, which is a very beautiful. And there's a whole list of them. I was going to read a couple out, but there's no time now, really. I'm just going to stop and see if anyone had any questions. But if you look at the fifth canto, you'll find in the descriptions of the different Varshas, Kimpurush Varsha, it says Hanuman is there with Arshdashena, I think, who's in charge of that place. And he's always worshipping Lord Rama. I couldn't quite work out from the text if Lord Ram's there, but I don't think he is. I think they worship him in his deity form, because he lives in Ayodhya. Prabhupada goes on to say that in the material world, the Lord's residence is Ayodhya. And then he describes it as being somewhere in India. It's not called that. Is it called Ayodhya now, still? It is, right? Okay. Anyway, so, yes, you can read the prayers there. And they're worth reading. So there's just a few minutes left till RT. I'll just pause there. I don't know if anyone has any questions.